wanted to start with one question on the Megillah. It's a question which has disturbed me many times. And I have an approach to it. And I also found that Chaim Kanievsky also is concerned with the same problem. So we'll take a look. Mordechai decides that he has to intervene with Ahasuerus to save the Jewish people. Haman has issued his decree. Now, and he has almost a whole year until the problem is hot. It's now Nisan. Next year, Adar. He has a lot of time to play with. He tells Esther that she should go immediately to Ahasuerus. Esther responds to him and tells him it's not a wise course of action. Why? If one walks into the king's chambers uninvited, unless the king is particularly inclined to be noisichem to you. And on the other hand, vanin lo nekreisi l'vol ha-melech zesh l'shim yim. Chazal say that in the teva ha-ilam in adam mukme ha-nafsha yesim shlishim yim. That he's going to call us up to his wife. So, her response is very simple. Why should I put my life on the line? And let's say I failed the first time. So we have other opportunities. We could look for other ways to succeed. If I get killed, so that's we roll the dice and we lost. So why roll the dice? She's right in every regard. And what does Mordechai do? He responds in a very sharp fashion. And you will disappear into the dustbin of history. To do it now. What was Mordechai's rush? She was right. She was right.
And then she also answers in terms of fasting 3 days through Pesach.
That's also, so that's another reason why should he have made it now? He couldn't wait till after Yontif to do it. Good, even if he wanted to rush, but what was such an urgency that he couldn't wait? He had a lot of time.
The schusim of Klal Yisrael keeping Yontif for Pesach, at least something.
But that's supposed to be at the end of Yontif too, the level more schusim.
I'm just saying, so that's...
So what pushed him? What was his rush? What was his rush?
What was the alternative?
The rush was very simple. She said, listen, I'm the king's wife. He's going to call me to his chambers soon. It hasn't been in a month, so very shortly I'm going to get called to his chambers without any doubt.
Well, if that wasn't the case, wouldn't you...
But it is the case. So, what does he need to do anything for? The game is going to come to him on his terms. So just wait. There was no question that she was right. That time, that inevitably, in short order, circumstances would play into her hands.
Well, on that issue, but on the border issue of taking action or not.
So there's no reason. So take action when she's called to Ahasuerus. Why do you don't rush? Life, you have to choose your moments, especially in delicate parashiyos. So what was this rush? The rush was itself extremely dangerous, almost reckless. What did Mordechai want? So, I thought the pshat is, the way I would learn pshat is like this. Mordechai understood the weak point of Ahasuerus. that Ahasuerus had a great deal of anxiety. He was extremely insecure. He had usurped the Malchus and was constantly concerned about a coup, that they'll try to sweep him out of office. Constantly on guard.
Because he didn't have a strong military. Right?
But he was not well. Listen, he had pushed aside one part of the bureaucracy and the power structure, but this was a tenuous grip. It was not a very comfortable grip on power. He was insecure in his power. So what he wanted to come to him and appeal to Ahasuerus to save the Jews. What if I said, no, if he signed off to kill us, he's not rescinding it so fast. That's not what he wanted. Instead, was he wanted to shake Ahasuerus up. And when he was shaken up, then maybe Esther could manipulate him. The mere fact that she walked in uninvited to him, that threw him off his equilibrium. Like, you know, what's going on? Something's happening, you know. Why in the world would the queen come in? She knows it's the same question that I'm asking. Ahasuerus had the same question. Like, why in the world is she coming? It must be that something is awry. Kill her would be the last thing he'll do under the circumstances. Because then his hope of salvation is lost.
Why?
Because she won't tell him what he wants to know. In fact, when she came in, he was on the alert, not for her, for him. Why is the queen coming now? Under such dangerous circumstances. It must be to something very, very important.
Does the Rav see that in the words, though? Because the words seem like it's not, he could say that, you know, give a little bit. He says, you not taking action, it seems to be. So his
that's, who cares? Action is irrelevant in this world. Cunning is what's important.
Well, because he was trying to set up that she was having an affair with Haman.
So he wanted, right, so Mamela, when she says to him, come to the Suda, and then, you know, I'll do it. Ahasuerus is already on. He's jumping out of his skin. And then she plays him another day, and she brought Haman already, so he doesn't know what's happening. Is he being set up? In the state of anxiety, so, and ultimately she succeeds because of that. Because when Haman does something, he blows a gasket, kills him on the spot. He played on the deepest fear of Ahasuerus, and he played with him. And he realized that that's the only way to succeed. Come with equanimity, dear Ahasuerus, it's not going to succeed. And he knew furthermore, I would add, that he saw before that Ahasuerus could lose himself. Right? He lost himself with Vashti. To do what he did with Vashti was a very bad move. Not only because he didn't look wise in front of the people that had killed the queen. This could not have been good for his PR. But it was bad for another reason. In European society, we know that many marriages were made to cement a monarchy. His claim to legitimacy is only through Vashti. As Vashti comes from Nebuchadnezzar. Without Vashti, he's just an usurper. Who is his claim to legitimacy? So politically, it was a terrible move. So he realized Ahasuerus can be hard-headed and lose himself. So Mordechai played with him. And he held this was the only way that he could succeed. And in fact, that's the reason that he succeeded. Is by the time she tells him what he wants, Ahasuerus is already, he's rearing to go. Like, where's it coming from? You know, was Haman the guy? What's happening? Is Esther conspiring? He was a time bomb waiting to explode. That's the perspective that I have on why And therefore he said, there is no other way to succeed. We're not going to succeed with the cautious path. That's not going to work with him. And he dafka succeeded because he went in a path which stirred Achashverosh into a frenzy. That's the way I looked at it. The Chaim Konyevsky has two pshat. I'm most interested in the second, but I'll go through both. His first pshat is that Mordechai was concerned that the state of fear that the Jewish people were in would itself cause many people to die. I mean, lo aleinu. We know in the time of the Holocaust, you know, people realize, you know, what the Germans were out to do, and they were completely in their control. People went crazy from it. The pachad, the realization that they were helpless. So Mordechai felt it was pikuach nefesh and waiting. Can't wait. Every day will take its toll. So therefore, he had to strike.
Yeah. Does he ask the question the same way the Rebbe does? Does he lay out the question the same way?
Same way, yeah. Exactly the same way, yeah. Exactly the same way. That it makes no sense. And he even has another twist. Even if I survive, he's going to be so angry at me for coming in uninvited. That why in the world is he going to listen to me? But it's basic, he has the same problem exactly that I have. He has a very interesting shayla. It happens to be this machloek is Bavli and Yerushalmi, and it's discussed in Shulchan Aruch Chayish and Mishpat. Very interesting and a very painful shayla. And unfortunately, in Jewish history, too often a shayla l'maisa. The shayla is the following: someone is b'pikuach nefesh. Am I allowed to enter into a situation of suffic b'pikuach nefesh to save him? That's the shayla. Shalmi says that I'm allowed to. And if I'm allowed, maybe I'm even a chuyiv to. But I'm certainly allowed to. But according to the Bavli, it would seem I'm not allowed to. A big discussion what the halacha is. I think it's Daruch HaShulchan who concludes, I believe, that be'emes, one's not supposed to enter into suffic pikuach nefesh, la halacha, like the Bavli. But he says one needs a very judicious view, weigh very, very carefully if it's actually suffic pikuach nefesh or not, because somebody else's life is on the line. So the shaila is, what was the heter for Esther to go? Forget everything else. What allowed her to violate the suffer b'kuach nefesh, even from vada b'kuach nefesh of others? So he wants the answer. You could answer perhaps another answer too. So he says that's why he told the Ratu Vesavich Tovendu that you're in the same b'kuach nefesh as everybody else. So whether you go or not, it's all over for you. So, Mamela, you might as well go. You could be mefakpek a little on his answer, which is, she wasn't a bikuach nefesh today, so what gave her a right to sacrifice a year of her life to go? You could give a different answer to his question, and that is that in general, what gave her a right to do what she did. She placed herself in a situation that, I mean, there's a question, there's a shayla on the Rishayim, if a woman is mechuyev b'horeg v'yavar, if she's involved in an immoral relationship. It's a shayla. Now, certainly if we hold, like the Rishayim, that she is mechuyev. So what gave her a right to enter into the situation? So the Beis Shmuel answers, the reason is because atzolos kol Yisrael ashayni. To save all of Klal Yisrael, that's different halachas. And then she's allowed to do it. So that could be the answer to this question too. If that's doicha yehorog v'yavar, so then klachayra should be able to be doicha, the cheshbon is also doicha nefesh m'pnei nefesh. But if there's no din of the yehorog, becomes botel b'mokum, what's necessary for Klal Yisrael to save Klal Yisrael, then that would answer Chaim Kanievsky's question to Lechayr. Oh, he has a second shot. Second shot is particularly what interests me. The second shot, he says, Chazal tell us, how did this all come about? How did this whole problem come about? The reason that is because Shenenu Mesudas Achashverosh. Achashverosh invited them to the Suda, and Mordechai told them not to go, and they went. So what was their cheshbon for going? Their cheshbon for going is that if we don't go, it's a sakana. And therefore, what's involved in it? What's involved, it doesn't involve, there'll be Nenem Yisudas Achashverosh, the Kehle Vedev Yisamigdash. None of this is Yehorog Vayavah. So not to go is dangerous, so we might as well go. Elamai, what was the mistake that they made? That you could look upon this as a Gzeirah Shmad. Why did Achashverosh bring them to the Suda? Achashverosh wanted them to sin. And he created all types of mechshalim for them, so that they should sin, so that the Rabbeinu Shalom would be angry at him and he would succeed. So he says, this is begadah, goes into a gezer shmad. And for that, they had to be moisa nefesh. Not for the Easter itself. But they weren't ready. What pushed them is they weren't ready to be moisa nefesh. That's it, our lives are on the line. I don't know, but alpha PK. They weren't ready to be moisa nefesh. So what schus did they need to save them? The schus that they needed to save them was the schus of Mesiras Nefesh. So Esther was Mesiras Nefesh to save Klal Yisrael. And he says, and furthermore you find that Mordechai, we'll come back to this in a moment, Mordechai did something very unusual. He said, why did Mordechai have to be in Haman's face? He said he's not allowed to bow down because Haman has an Avodah Zarah. So he's bowing down to Avodah Zarah. Tell you. So you know Haman's coming every day, so just don't be there. And you won't have a problem. So what prompted him to be there every day? What was the point in inciting Haman? Well, what did he do such a thing for? So he says the pshat is that or he says he had a different eitzah. It's a very interesting eitzah. He says he could have bowed down, been bowing down before Haman came. And that the Shulchan Aruch says that before the Avodah Zarah is there, if you bow down, it's not a problem. So it's very interesting. This is a psaka from Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. That someone was in a place where they, some galach or something came, and they had to stand up to give cover to him. So he was in a setting where he could not stand up. So he asked Rav Moshe what to do. So Rav Moshe said it very simple. He says, stand up before he comes. So you don't stand up to him. That's this halacha. If you did the act before he comes, you're not mechuyev. There's no violation of giving cover to the Zohar. So why, in fact, did he arouse and incite Haman? Just don't be around. So he says his reason for this was, you find it by Hananya, Mishael, Azariah, that he wanted Nebuchadnezzar to be three people of every nation, and he put a tzelem there, and that they should bow down to it. So they asked the Shaila, and they told them, they went to the Novi Yecheskel. So Yecheskel told them, Chubi Kamat Rega. Don't show up there, that's all, just lay low until this, you know, problem passes. So they told them that we don't want to do that. So he asked them, why not? So they said, because if we don't do it, so people are going to say that everyone bowed down. They're not going to realize that we weren't there. There's masses of people, hundreds of people. So they're going to say we were also there because nobody protested it. Everyone bowed. So they'll assume that we also bowed down. So he says, Ein lecha chilul Hashem godol mizil. But they'll say that we bowed down to the Avodah Zarah. So the only way that we could prevent that chilul Hashem is we'll go and we won't bow down. Then we'll make the news. And we'll prevent chilul Hashem. We'll show that Klal Yisrael doesn't bow down to Avodah Zarah under any circumstance. So Yecheskel was maskum with them. So Mordechai said, I have the same problem. Everyone's bowing down. If I don't make a stand, so they'll say that I also agree with it.
Everybody was there?
There were piles of sorrow that were present as he came. So if they'll bow down, they're going to say that Mordechai, the Yehudi, was also part of the court. He also bows down. Nobody stands up to him, and everyone bows down to him. So he says that's why he stood up. That's why he dafka went, and he didn't bow down to him. To show that no, that we're perish from Avodah Zarah. We don't care. So he says, but normally he says, Haman ignored us. Haman did not. We find in the beginning, we don't find that Haman took offense. When did Haman decide to strike? He says, after he comes back from Achashverosh, then all of a sudden it's the gate to Manon Lebanon. He's bothered by the fact that Mordechai doesn't bow down. What happened there all the time until then? Until the day he came back from Achashverosh. And he says, Chazal tell us that something happened on this day. On this day, Esther made sure that he should be in Haman's face. Haman was not anxious in confronting Mordechai, so he skirted him. He didn't confront him head on. But Esther wanted at this time that when he comes back from Ahasuerus, that he should dafka confront him. So she arranged that when Haman's coming back, Mordechai is going to be there, and he pointedly won't bow down to him. For what reason? Because she thought that maybe he'll get so upset that he'll kill him. So she tried to kill Haman with this. That Haman would be so angered that maybe he'd have a fit and he would die. Part of then of the Hatzolah was the Messiah that he was Meisr Nefesh on this day. And in the Hatzolah, not only was Esther Meisr Nefesh.
She wasn't worried that maybe Haman would just kill Mordechai on the spot?
She was, well, in other words, they were willing to undertake the Messiah's Nefesh to try to save Klal Yisrael. To be Meisr Nefesh, she held that Schus maybe could save them. That's the way he learns. Al Kalponim Ravaisa, what we learn from here is that our survival is dependent. Our survival is dependent on Mesiras Nefesh. Now, we think a lot of times that we survive in mud fashion. We stay out of the limelight. But love bedafka that that's a schus. A lot of times the schus that we need is. They didn't want to make waves when Achashverosh made a suda. They brought them up or brought them down. It's what brought Klal Yisrael down. The Hatzolah was the willingness to be Meisr Nefesh. The Chofetz Chaim, it's an amazing thing. I mean, I can't get over it. The Chofetz Chaim said that we made a mistake when the communists were trying to seize power in Russia and the Jewish communists were persecuting us, we made a mistake. In a time of Shmad, in that Oifen, as took place at the time of the Yevonim, then we should have taken knives and gone to war with them. It's not our cheshbon, the cheshbon, how we're going to survive it. What we should have done, that was our mistake, he said. We should have physically taken up arms against them and fought. And how in the Esther Rabbeinu Shalom for his atzolah. B'shashma, that's what's necessary. I mean, it's mind-boggling to think about it. The Chofetz Chaim says that was the mistake that we made. He was...
Against all the communists or just the Jewish communists?
Whichever ones, I guess, whoever persecuted them, they should have, particularly the Jewish communists, were the biggest ones that made trouble for them. But he said, we should have taken up arms against them. And see, Ula Yerachem Hashem, that we would have escaped from them. The Chofetz Chaim was very, very strong on the Inyan of Mesiras Nefesh. In 1930, the Polish government was incited by Maskilim, Jewish Maskilim, to make a decree that the Rabbeim, the Chadorim, have to speak Polish and they need university degrees, which was Lahoya Vilay Nivra. There were no such people in the Frum community in Poland that spoke, most of them didn't speak Polish, and they certainly didn't have university degrees. So this would have wiped Chinuch off the map. So the Chofetz Chaim was, in the last 3 years of his life, he called an Asif in Warsaw, or called Gdolei Yisrael. The Belzer Rebbe at the time sent a message to the Chofetz Chaim that he had a certain Rav who represented him at all in Yonim of Tzorchei Tzivah for Klal Yisrael, if this Rav could come. The Chofetz Chaim said, no, you have to come yourself. So Kol Gdolei Yisrael of Poland came, of every stripe, Misnagdim, Chassidim. And the Chofetz Chaim was the Yeshiv Rosh. The Chofetz Chaim told them the following. Now, let us realize, he was talking to Kol Gdolei Yisrael. This was not, he didn't give a, this wasn't a drosha, a besmedrash, you know, to the Balabatim, to the lay people of Poland. This was a drosha that he gave to 15, 20 Gdolei Yisrael. And he said that when Moshe Rabbeinu went to Paro, so how, what happened? How come this Canaan were not zoicha later to come with him to Har Sinai? Because before they got to the palace, they dropped out. So when it came to Har Sinai, the Rebbe Shalom told them, Ad Kan, you can't come all the way. He says, I'm going to have to go and to be the one to be the spokesman before the Polish Prime Minister. He says, anyone that doesn't come along with me, that doesn't have the Mesiras Nefesh to come along with me, he says, when you come upstairs, Achamei Rest from Shonat, they're going to Gan Eden, they're going to throw you out of your place in Gan Eden. That's what the Chofetz Chaim, can you imagine? Now, this was not a drosha that he gave to Labor, but this was a drosha to the Gedolei Yisrael. He says, if anyone dares not to come with me, he says, in Shemayim, they're going to throw you out of Gan Eden, your place in Gan Eden. No less than the Rebbe Shalom said, this Canaan, I cannot come to Har Sinai. The Chofetz Chaim was ready. He saw an Indian of Shmad and Fechinuch of Yalde Yisrael and demanded Mesiras Nefesh. And he succeeded. The Chinuch was left unfettered until the war because of it. But the readiness to be Mesa Nefesh for our values, that's the Yisoid. That's the Yisoid. What were we zoicha to with Mesiras Nefesh? In the Al HaNisim, it says three phrases. But we need to be oimed on what we're saying. The Al HaNisim says the following. V'atob rachamecho harabim, hifarto es atzosa, v'kulkalto es machshavto, there are three things here. Hifarta as atzosa, v'kilkalta as machshavto, v'ashevoisa lo gmula v'roisha. Three things. What are these three things? Atas Haman, we can only say is one thing. Haman called a meeting of all his yayatsim. That was the eitzah that he took. What was the eitzah? That Mordechai has a thorn on his side. So how is he going to get rid of Mordechai? So they decided they're going to make a tree, Gavoya Chamishim Ava, and they're going to hang Mordechai. So what will they do? They'll go to the Melech in the wee hours of the morning, and they'll finish off Mordechai, and then they'll go to the Mishteh Sameach Tov Lev. That was Atzah Sama. What's Machsheva Sama? So Machsheva Sama is before. It says that they wrote letters to overcome Machsheva's Haman Ben Amadasa that he wrote La'abiris Kol HaYehudim. That was his plan to destroy Klal Yisrael. That was the second aspect of what Haman did. And finally, Vashem Oysa Lo Gmula Baroyshe. Basalu Oysa Vaz Bon Avalites. That Rebbeinu Shel Olam not only protected Klal Yisrael, but he took revenge. He exacted Mida Kereged Mida from the Sinai Yisrael. It's a real moment in Jewish history. We've been zeicha many times, Dwey Fartas Hatzosai, Kulkaltas Machshafto, Lulei Zebi wouldn't survive. But rarely in history were we zeicha that together with that was Vahashivotza Lugmula Vareisha, that the perpetrators were brought down in the same midah, they brought down at all, and especially in the same midah which they wished to inflict upon Klal Yisrael. I mean, here the midah keneged midah could not have been more apparent. Haman made the eighth gevurah chamishim am. He didn't. Somebody didn't come and slit his throat. They hung on that tree, on which he wanted to hang Mordechai. Here they hung him. Could there be any clearer statement of the hashgacha of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam that what the avla of Haman was? That he started him with Mordechai. So through Mesiras Nefesh, we were zeicha that the Mordechai was spared. We were zeicha that Klal Yisrael was spared, and we were zeicha v'hashivoyse lo gmula b'roisha that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam brought the coming for Klal Yisrael to. It's a rare moment in Jewish history. There are very few in all the history of the Golos. There are very, very few such moments that the Sinai Yisrael had such a mapola as Haman. And many times we were saved. We were saved. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam speared us from their designs, but they didn't fall because of it. Here we were zeicha. We were zeicha in more modern times also to Vashivosa Lagmula Bereshe. We were not so zeicha, unfortunately, in the Eifartas Atzosa V'Kulkaltas Machshavta. When Eichmann Yimach Shemoi V'Zichroi was captured by Jews, put on trial by Jews, and hung by Jews, that was a moment of Vashivosa Lagmula Bereshe. Unfortunately, it didn't come so well with the Fartas Atzosa V'Kulkaltas Machshavta. That we were in Zeichet. But one of the real moments in Jewish history that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam brought about that one of the arch enemies of the Jewish people fell into Jewish hands and was killed by Jews. That is a special moment. I don't think that I fully understand yet, comprehend the chesed that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam did for us with that. There's a certain nechama to Klal Yisrael through that which took place. And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam granted that after all we were through, at least there should be some measure of nechama. But this is a rare moment in Jewish history. Regime that Achashverosh had. We understand if you study despotic regimes, how these regimes work. There are inevitably a multitude of power centers, and the king endeavors to keep them in line, sometimes by having them vie against each other, certain ones that are more loyal to him, and keeping a balance, you know, between all the varied parties so that he stays on top. With that, we can understand something that's very, very peculiar. Esther, the king asks Esther after the first day of the war, what do you want? So she tells him two things I want. One I understand and one I don't understand. She wants another day to eliminate the Son of Israel and Shushan. So that I understand. Shushan was the Washington D.C. of its time. And obviously the most powerful henchmen of Haman were ensconced in the central bureaucracy of the government. So she wanted another day to root them out. I mean, Ahasuerus wasn't going to allow bloodbaths forever. But this he would allow. So she wanted another day to eliminate, you know, his functionaries, his powerful functionaries in the bureaucracy. That I understand well. Because sof kol sof, this was, as I spoke about recently on Shabbos, a major concern. The permanent government is sometimes a lot more powerful than any other part of the government. And the permanent bureaucracy is the one that does all types of things in the name of the king. If she won't eliminate the common bureaucracy, so what's going to stop them from striking back at the Jewish people? So the same way that Mordechai became prime minister for that reason, she wished to lessen the danger to the Jewish people, and the best way was to eliminate his people from the bureaucracy. So she wanted another day in Shushan to clean them out. That I understand. But then she made a very strange request. She says, "Ve'isaseres b'nei Haman yislu alaitz." That she wanted Aseres b'nei Haman to be killed in the first place. That we understand. Machiavelli already explained that to us, in case we didn't understand it, you know. Just to eliminate Haman would not exactly accomplish the purpose. I mean, he had no shortage of sons to take up the cause for him. So she wanted to eliminate them totally. Okay, wipe Haman off the map. So he's not going to come back to haunt us. I understand that. But what did she gain by Ve'isaseres b'nei Haman yislu alaitz? What she gained from that? What was the point? For what purpose? They're dead. You need them to yislu alaitz? For what? So I believe the pshat is that in the nature of that society, it was hard to determine that which took place. Transparency didn't exist. So the question is, what happened that Haman and his sons were hung? What was behind that? That it could be varied explanations. It could be that there was another power center in the Persian Empire, and he stepped on their toes. So basically what happened is, this has gone on, you know, with all types of governments. So they struck at Haman and his family. Basically, a terrorist assault, and they took him out. It wasn't done because the king signed off on it, but he got too much in their way, so they struck at him, and they took care of him. Or did this stem from Ahasuerus himself? Now that's a very critical difference to what Esther wanted. Her goal was to protect the Jewish people. If it's clear that Ahasuerus is on the side of the Jewish people, then there'll be a measure of fear of those that wish to harm them. If this is merely an intramural fight between two different power bases, but the king has no vested interest in the outcome, then she hasn't protected the Jewish people. So how do you tell the difference? There's one way you tell the difference. You want to kill? Do you want to kill? Have a gang and kill somebody? Yeah, you can kill them. You want to? Somebody in one part of the mafia wants to take out another part of the mafia, yeah, they can set them up and they'll kill them. They can gun them down in Manhattan. It's happened. No problem. But what you can't do is you can't leave the guy laying on the sidewalk for 24 hours. That's not going to happen. Why? Because the government is not behind it. So the government's not going to let the guy, the Don, lay there on the ground. They come, whatever, they'll send in and they'll take him away and clean up the mess. But if the government is behind it, then they can leave him there for 24 hours too. No one's going to take him away. The only ones that could see that Haman could hang from the tree for 24 hours in the middle of Shushan is Ahasuerus himself. If anyone else, other than if it was a hit from some other gang against Haman, so the king would come. This is not, you know, if the king didn't do it, he's not going to allow it to stand. The king doesn't want such things openly to go on, that people go and murder other people without asking the king about. Of course, he's going to cut him down and brush the matter under the carpet. Life's going to go on. The only way that Haman and his children will hang for another 24 hours in the street is if the king is behind it. The king, if he wants to make a point, he's the only one that could authorize Haman to hang on, will allow Haman to hang in the street, because this represents what the government did. So that's why she told Ahasuerus what she wants, Vesaseres b'nei Haman yislu alaitz. I don't want there to be any mistake in Persia about why they're hanging. They're not hanging. This was not a hit from another gang, a rival power center. This is the government itself stands behind it. If the people in Persia know that the government stands behind it, then she's going to protect the Jewish people. So therefore, that's why she made this request, Vesaseres b'nei Haman yislu alaitz, that this is the only way to protect. This is the only way to protect Klal Yisrael, is for it to be manifest that Ahasuerus is behind that which took place. We need to celebrate in Purim the chasodim of the Rabbeinu Shalom, the survival of the Jewish people. The Yaivitz writes in Akdama of a Siddur, near the beginning of the Akdama. It's a very lengthy Akdama, but I want to find that it's near the beginning of the Akdama to the Siddur. He writes that if we wish to observe Nisan, which transcend the Nisan of Yitzias Mitzrayim, let us merely study the history of the survival of the Jewish people in Golus. And the Nisim that are involved in that exceed the Nisim of Yitzias Mitzrayim. The chesed of the Rabbeinu Shalom that we have survived, it's totally without any rational explanation how it could be, why it could be. And that's what we need to celebrate more on Purim than anything else. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam's chesed towards Klal Yisrael. We live in a world which is a very dangerous place. You know, there was a small period in time, relatively in history, post the Holocaust, where the danger was lessened. But the world has already overcome that hang-ups about the Holocaust already. Now they're back to business as usual. And we're not one of the major religions of the world in terms of a billion adherents that we don't have. By the Hashgacha, we're not sitting on one of the world's major oil finds. So why in the world does anyone want us? And it's reflected daily in the politics. You know, we have a little tiny two-by-nothing country in the Persian Gulf, but it sits astride major oil, and the whole world is at the doorstep. You know, what can we supply to them? But the realization that we are in no different circumstance than we've been since the very inception of the Jewish people almost 4,000 years ago. Avraham was Avraham Ivri, the one that stood apart and alone against the entire world. And we're not frightened to be in that situation. We're not frightened. The same Rabbeinu Shel Olam is with us. And that's the lesson that was a Purim. It's a Yontif, the only Yontif that we celebrate, which is a Yontif of the Golus. Yitzias Mitzrayim was the yontif that we hadn't entered Eretz Yisrael, we were on the way to Eretz Yisrael. That's not a yontif of the Golus. That's a yontif of coming out of the Golus and going to Eretz Yisrael. Purim remains Akati Avdi Achashverosh Hanani. After all the dust settles, we're still citizens of the Persian Empire. We weren't Zoicha to go on Mars back to Eretz Yisrael. And that's the Ched, but we celebrate not the Chesed of the Rabbeinu Shalom, and the Chesed of our survival in the Golus. That's the Chag of Rabbi Yisrael.